from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Infield stays in. Joey Loperfido will bat for the first time.
There's a sharply hit baseball down the left field line. One run scores. Here comes Yiner. Two RBI base hit for Loperfido. Astros lead it by three. It is 8-5.
Yeah, that was the hit that clinched it for me yesterday. That two-run single by Loperfido gave him a little wiggle room, made it 8-5. They would go on. I think Trey Cabbage had a two-run single or double or something after that. And the Astros win 10-5 in an 11-inning game that, because of Mother Nature, took like 7 hours to finish. But, as we come in on Monday, I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Seth, have you heard the good news?
I have heard this astoundingly good news, Sean.
There's so much good news. I say, have you heard the good news, as if this is a singular bullet point. But I have three bullet points that I would love to share with the audience, because this is the good news. The Astros, first time over 500 for the first time all season, because as we know, they started out 0-4 against the Yankees. Best record in Major League Baseball for the month of June. 17-8, and we got to talk more about that. Given some of the things this team has had inflicted upon it by the baseball gods. But most importantly, Seth, 3.5 games back of the Seattle Mariners in the AL West, the closest they have been, and 2 in the loss column, closest they've been in a long, long time. Good morning, my friend. How was your
good morning? Yeah, it is a. It's been a good. It was a good month. June was.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I kind of kept waiting. I feel like Callis had jinxed Jake Myers by, remember, Jake had a great May, but then as May wound down, Callis kept saying, like, well, there's one guy that's not going to be happy to see the calendar turn to June. I'm like, hey, come on, man, it's kind of an arbitrary thing. And then all of a sudden Myers stunk in June. So I didn't want Myers to be like, well, boy, the Astros not looking forward to June not being around. And he steered clear of all of that.
He did.
So
he did.
You can save me your no-hitter jinxes and everything. I am all about the calendar month jinxes.
Absolutely.
Versus a team that was in the exact same boat as you, I think, is
exact
important.
Same.
And, you know, I saw as the Mets started to reclaim ground on that game yesterday on social media, say, well, yeah, the Astros struggle versus bad teams. Like, well, no, the Mets are a 500 baseball team. They're the epitome of average. They're not an awesome baseball team, but they'd had a really, really... They were, along with the Astros, one of the best teams in baseball in the month of June. And the Astros now, I think you can point to what we were hoping for by the time you got out of the month of June. Wow, you had a resounding series victory versus one of the very best teams in baseball, the Baltimore Orioles. And then you came up against a team that was in the same boat as you, the Mets, and win a series against a team that's trying to do the same thing you're doing.
Yeah.
And also a team, the Mets, and that have spent heavily in the last couple of years and don't have anything to show for it. The Astros have done a better job of that over the last 2 years. But they looked a lot more like the team that they are on paper. The back of the baseball court card has been redeemed, Sean.
Well, the winner of that game yesterday was going to finish the month of June with the best record for the month of June in Major League Baseball. It was almost like a weird, I'm not going to say like playoff atmosphere, because that, I don't even know how many of the players in the game knew that. I didn't know it until someone pointed it out during the game. I think Callis or Blum pointed it out on the broadcast during the game. What I liked about this series this weekend, Seth, was that if you had told me before the weekend, because I know one of the things that I was harping on last week was, man, boy, the way they are so thin right now in the starting rotation is that when either Fromber, Hunter, or Ronel Blanco are on the mound, you better go get that win that day, because the other days are going to be really dicey. You got Arrigetti, and then they, over the weekend, they probably made this determination a while ago, but made public the determination, we're going to go with Dubin, and then we're going to muck it together. And they had to muck it together for 11 innings. But I think the thing that I like most about them taking 2 out of 3 from the Mets this weekend was that if you had told me before the weekend that Ronel Blanco wouldn't make it to the 6th inning and give up 6 earned runs, that Fromber, same thing, and that we'll get to that, and that the other game would be a bullpen game, yeah, I would have said they're probably getting swept in this series, you know?
Instead they take
2 out of 3, and they showed on Saturday, they showed tremendous nards by winning that game. And then yesterday was kind of your garden variety extra inning game, gave up some runs late. You know, Abreu gives up the home run to tie it up. But boy, I like that they piled it on late in the games as well in these games, too.
Yes. That's something we've seen over the last week or two, is that they've been, remember in the beginning of this season, they were absolutely abysmal when trailing in the 7th inning and later. They'd blown so many saves. Like, there were so many things, those little razor's edge type of things that the Astros used to be awesome at, they just weren't doing. That's been a return there. I think the on the scrappiness on the pitching staff, that's been another hallmark of the Astros over these last few years, whether it's starters who reinvent themselves, you know, Charlie Morton or Garrett Cole, or relievers that emerge and end up being way more than people anticipated. Sean Dubin had never thrown more than 35 pitches in an outing. He ends up going 3 1/3 scoreless innings on 55 pitches. So, you know, throwing 20 more pitches than he's ever thrown in a major league outing, goes out and does everything you need. I mean, looking into this Blue Jays series, now you do bemoan a little bit an extra innings game where, you know, Hader didn't go out because Hader had been warming up ready for the 9th. And gosh, I guess if we really wanted to split hairs there, I mean, in the broadcast booth, they were talking the whole time about how they could see the storms rolling in. The radar was showing that this is almost definitely going to be a rainout. If the Astros had been able to maintain that healthy lead they had at the beginning, then maybe they would have just called the game and it would have been an Astros victory. But Mother Nature wanted to make it tougher for us, and she arrived a little bit too late.
Yep.
So, Dubin doing what he did, and there's just something there with that kid. It's funny, Sean, I've told you before, Sean Dubin grew up like 15 miles from my wife's hometown. And I was sitting with my brother, my likely future brother-in-law. I don't want to jinx that. But awesome kid. He's a Mets fan. So I was on Saturday, I was watching the game with him. And we had some good conversations about, Pete Alonso and all that stuff. But Dubin was really genuinely, this isn't a slight, he was nothing special in high school. You know, didn't throw that hard. And that's a small little area up there. It's small schools. Like, my wife graduated with 85 kids in her high school class. And he, even in that league, he wasn't really anything special. And he just kept playing baseball. He's kind of the redneck version of a lot of the Astros Latin American pitchers, which is the Astros saw something in this kid who was a late bloomer that a lot of other teams might have given up on.
Yeah.
But they're like, yeah, why buy? Yeah, what? It's baseball. Guys take until they're 25, 26 years old to develop sometimes. Why would we worry about it?
Yeah.
So, that's like I've got a special place in my heart for Dubin.
I thought Espada played it perfectly with him, too. They were they were kind of intimating on the broadcast, like, hey, he's getting into that second time through the lineup with the Mets, and he's thrown, he had thrown to that point right around his, I think you said 35 pitches was the most he'd thrown. He was right around that number, a little over that number. And my thought was heading into the fourth, I'm like, they've probably been kind of preparing for this all week. They can squeeze one more inning out of him. That would be good. They did bring him out. He got it. He got one out. He puts a guy on. They yanked him. You know, like, yeah. I said a few weeks ago, I'm out on Joe Espada, largely because some of the silly things in retrospect he might have been forced to say about Jose Abreu.
Yeah.
So I'm getting to the point with Espada where I'm giving him a reset button here, and he's done a nice job lately. All right, we can't get through the open without talking about this, though. Jose Altuve, for just the second time, I believe in his entire career, yeah, ejected from a baseball game yesterday. It was a tricky situation, too, because it was two men on, two outs, at a point in the game where some insurance runs would have been really nice. Jose Altuve fouls a ball off his foot, clearly reacts to it, getting fouled off his foot. Ball rolls into the field of play, and the Mets play it out like they should, as if the ball is a fair ball. They do. They play it out. They throw Jose Altuve out at first. He wasn't even running to first. He was nursing his toe that just got hit with a foul ball. And he gets called out, and Jose Altuve exploded on these umps. Yeah. The umps conferred about it. The home plate umpire didn't see it or hear it, I guess. None of the other three umpires out there were in a position or were watching closely enough to overturn the call. So they said, sorry, Jose, you're out. Jose Altuve goes ballistic. Like, this was wild to see. Throws his helmet down, shatters his helmet. He's going nuts. Everybody's holding him back. Jose Altuve was asked after the game about the ejection.
Ball hits your foot and you don't get the call. That was a big spot in the game, too.
Yeah, I think that was the reason why I was a little mad, because big situation in the game. And, you know, in the situation we are as a team trying to win some games, and you don't really want stuff like that to happen.
What would any explanation on what they told you?
They didn't see it.
We don't see you get that mad. It was just what was just kind of going through you at that point.
Yeah, like I said, I think the game takes you to a lot of emotions of going online, you know, and I understand the guy behind the play didn't see it because, you know, the catcher's there, but you have another three guys, first, second, and third. I felt like it was kind of obvious, so that was why I was so mad.
Definitely obvious on the replay. I guess that's my big thing, Seth. Like, I'm not super angry with the home plate ump, other than just read the batter. Look at him. He's hopping around on one leg after he fouls the ball off his foot.
It's not like Altuve's a guy that tries to game the system all that often.
He's not a flopper. Right. The first, second, and third base umpires, you know, they're 150 feet from the play. Do I get really angry or upset with them? Maybe. I don't know. My whole thing is, why is that not reviewable? Like, it's, you know?
No, man. I know. It's one of those things that it seems like that's the very type of thing that should be reviewable.
Yeah.
Like, when there's a clear cut. That's why I had high hopes for baseball replay, because there's so many more things that are pretty clear cut and defined.
Yeah.
And it seems like they're still working their way out. If this were the NFL, this would be a major talking point on First Take for like 3 weeks in a row.
It totally would. It totally would. Well, that's the thing, too, is the outcome, the actual correct outcome of that play isn't anything where you need to assume anything. Like, it's like, get back in the batter's box. There's still two strikes. Everybody get back to the base, and let's keep playing.
A series where the home plate umpire had forgotten what the count was at one point.
Did you see that?
You know,
oh, my God.
Saturday,
what
right?
the hell?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm
like, am I taking crazy pills? He won.
I know. Everybody like I got it.
That's wild.
It's frustrating. Yep. I look, Altuve, I like that we've seen a darker side to him.
Twice now.
You know, yeah, well, you're talking about this season.
In the last two weeks.
Last week he had that. He was, like, visibly angry walking away. Where I was empathizing with Altuve on that particular play was, man, you take a ball off your great toe there.
Yeah.
That's painful. He had the rage that you feel when you're in the emergency room at 2 a.m., and they're just letting you sit there while you're bleeding from your ear. And you're like, I'm kind of,
hello?
I think this might be a big deal here. I think I might be dying. And yes. Then you're like,
that's what it was,
receptionist
man.
Is flirting with a cop at the desk. And you're just like, I'm bleeding out.
Hello?
I'm bleeding out.
I'm on my second pint now. Hello?
Yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll talk plenty about the Astros. Top of the hour, we'll do the good and the bad from the weekend. We've got Acknowledge Me. Big Acknowledge Me, man.
Ooh,
a lot of acknowledges coming up at 720. Yeah, there's a ton of them coming up at 720. Will Anderson. Man, I was ready to go to bed last night, and this pops up on my YouTube stream at like 10 o'clock. I'm like, got to go get some cuts because Will Anderson was on the Rich Eisen show on Friday.
Yeah. He had some really good stuff in this interview. Yeah.
It was really good. Eisen did a great job with this interview, I thought. Really good job.
He did.
Yeah.
Kudos to Eisen.
He did a good job. So Will Anderson on the impact of Danielle Hunter. When did you know CJ was the dude? Some really good stuff from Will Anderson. We'll circle back to the Astros. Big headlines, too, from overnight in the NBA we'll get to as well. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good weekend. I would say good weekend for the Astros. 2 out of 3 against a team that was just as hot as they were. And now you're 42-41, man, above 500, going to Toronto. I didn't know this thing was a day game until they threw the schedule up on the screen after the game last night.
Yeah, which typically wouldn't be a big deal, but after you have a 7-hour saga that ends up becoming you finishing in the evening Eastern time, now all of a sudden, wait a second, you gotta travel and then play a day game? What the hell?
Where you literally use almost your entire bullpen. You
crossing across international waters,
right,
that being the St. Lawrence River, but still.
Lake Ontario. Yeah. So we'll get back to the Astros in headline. By the way, if you're just waking up, Paul George signs with the Philadelphia 76ers, 4 years, $212 million. So that was the big news in the NBA overnight. This used to be like, man, when LeBron used to be a free agent or Kevin Durant used to be a free agent, like one of some huge, huge name. This is like a national holiday for NBA fans back in the day, July 1st.
Right.
And Paul George still a big name, but it's not one that you wait till 1 a.m. to see what's happening with. But good signing. Good signing for the Sixers.
Paul George, I would say Paul George and Kevin Durant, though, too, are kind of the guys I look at in the NBA of, man, a catastrophic injury, but that you can't, like, it doesn't mean that you can't go on and play another decade.
Yeah, Paul George with that broken leg. Yeah, that was, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was wild.
Theismann-esque.
Yeah, big time, big time. Will Anderson was on the Rich Eisen show on Friday. I didn't see this till last night. It's awesome. It's classic Will Anderson. You saw the same thing I did, Seth. I'm like, okay, he's doing this via Zoom with Rich Eisen. And he's clearly in his vehicle or in a vehicle. And I'm looking at the interior of the vehicle that he's in. I'm like, okay, you can only really see like the windows and the side and what the, you know, kind of what the coloring is like in there. I'm like, all right, doesn't look like the most stylish vehicle. It doesn't look like something that a young player, you know, would be. It just got, you know, 35 yeah. million bucks guaranteed would be driving. But okay, turns out I was right. It was his family's old truck that he used to drive in high school.
Yeah, it was his truck from high school.
Yeah. So he was back in Georgia doing this interview because he had his camp, his kids' camp in Georgia over the weekend. So he didn't
feel the need to go out and rent an Escalade or anything right? and show the kids, hey, this is what happens when you make it.
It was
I like this. It's a good lesson for the kids. Like, hey, you can roll up in a. You don't have to roll. You don't have to define yourself by your vehicle.
Yeah,
good job, Will Anderson.
And it was good. And we found that out. Because Rich Eisen asked him, like, what are you rolling in there, Will? You know, what are you doing? And it turns out Will Anderson's getting ready to have either lunch or dinner with his family, but decided to walk outside for 10 minutes and talk to Rich Eisen, right?
No, I thought he was at his high school football camp.
Well, he was in town for the high school football camp, but he left his family. His family was about to eat or something like that, and he walked outside to do the interview. Yeah, okay. he walked outside to do the interview. So at any rate, Will Anderson talking to Rich Eisen. Rich Eisen did a really good job with this interview because there were a lot of questions where I'm like, all right, we've already heard Will talk about, you know, getting Danielle Hunter as a teammate. But Eisen's follow-ups were really good in this interview. Like, I feel like the follow-ups gave us some good Will Anderson we haven't heard yet.
And he was a good paint-me-a-picture guy.
He was a great paint-me-a-picture guy.
Oh, you said this. Well, paint me a picture of what that means.
Yeah. Maybe Rich Eisen is 979 guy on the text page. Paint-me-a-picture guy. Shout out to paint-me-a-picture guy. Here's Will Anderson talking about improving during the offseason. Rich Eisen asked him, give me a specific example of something that you saw on film that you need to work on.
It's a lot of times just finishing on the quarterback and a lot of times just taking the edge instead of just like, I would just stop at the top of my rush and not get extension at the top of my rush. So those are like some of the things that I've been like heavily working on this offseason and just working on my steps and my pass rush. So those are some things like I was just watching last year. I was like, bro, like, all you have to do is turn the corner right here and just reach, and you probably would have got a sack. So just those little things to fine-tune my game.
And you still wound up being Defensive Rookie of the Year anyway.
Thank God.
and we've heard that first part of him before, but the one thing he was talking about there was the frustration of going back and watching the film from last year. So he's describing what, you know, as he's this offseason been watching his film from his rookie year, he sees just how many opportunities were out there on the table. And in the first half of the season, this is where I remember I was getting frustrated last year because a lot of people wanted to give him a lot of credit for all these QB pressures he was getting. But Will Anderson himself at that time said, no, that's not good enough. I need to get sacks because sacks are sometimes overrated as a gauge. But with the case of Will Anderson last year, there were a lot of things in the first half of the season where you could see, man, he's really, really close. He's just got to finish. It's that last 0.4 seconds at the end of his rush where, he would have all those sacks. He's doing a lot of really good things, but he would have more sacks if he would just do these few little things. And that's where, like, Danielle Hunter has been such a resource for him, I think, as well. Aside from all the coaching and everything, Danielle Hunter is just incredible at those finer aspects of finishing a pass rush. And he's been leaning on – Will's been leaning on Danielle Hunter heavily this offseason for a lot of tutelage there.
Yeah, let's hear from Will Anderson on Danielle Hunter, and then I want to talk about that a little bit, too. Just general feelings on how he and Hunter can help each other this season.
Teams are just going to have to decide. I mean, that's a double-digit sack guy every year. So teams are just going to be like, shoot, we got to double this guy. So we don't know about this guy. So it's going to be fun. I think we're going to cause a lot of havoc and, you know, disrupt a lot of stuff. So I'm excited to go to war with him.
Yeah, that's one of those things. So they're paying Danielle Hunter 2 years, about $50 million. Pretty much every penny of it's guaranteed. May as well be. It's practically a fully guaranteed contract. But I do think, Seth, like, that'd be one of those things. Like, if the Texans just didn't have another legitimate pass rusher, then you sign Danielle Hunter to 2 years, $50 million. You go, okay, well, there's our double-digit sack guy, and we hope that he can eat, you know, solo like he had to do maybe at times in Minnesota. This is one of those things that because you have Will Anderson on the roster, he's on a rookie deal still. He's very cheap. He's eager to learn. I think that's a big thing with Will, is that it's almost like you're paying Danielle Hunter $24 million a year to go get the Texans double-digit sacks from him. And, oh, by the way, you get like a private defensive end coach for Will Anderson in a way as well. You know what I mean?
Right, right, yeah. Who's also, you know, not that this is a huge factor necessarily, but I think it does help that Danielle Hunter is from here. And, you know, he's around a lot, and he's going to be working out at the facility during this downtime. And he'll have more even one-on-one time with Will Anderson over the next several weeks. Yep. The big thing about having two guys opposite each other, yes, it does make a big difference in terms of, like, how many one-on-ones do you get. They slide the protection towards Danielle. Will Anderson's got a one-on-one and vice versa. But I think the exciting part comes where D'Amico is so adamant about the swarm mentality and wants to get guys who are like that. So when you get a guy that, let's say Danielle Hunter gets the one-on-one and Will Anderson ends up getting more attention on a particular play, you really want to be sure you've got a guy who doesn't shut it down just because he's getting double teamed or because this isn't going to be his play. Because what Danielle Hunter as many times as not is, if he doesn't get the sack, he's going to flush the QB.
Yep.
And having guys that are just, you know, running around like maniacs there end up getting a lot of the peripheral collections from all of that. And that's what I really like about the dynamic of adding D'Amico Autry and some of the other guys on that defensive line. You want frenetic activity all the time so that when your A-plus numero uno pass rusher on that play might have a great rush and come clean, but the QB escapes the pocket, you got a lot of guys swarming after him.
Yeah, it's fun to see Will Anderson do an interview because you can see his face light up when you bring up certain things, and Danielle Hunter is definitely one of those things. High expectations for the Texans this year. We know that. They're favored to win the division. Dark horse Super Bowl pick. A lot of people are climbing on board saying they're going to get to where they've never been to before this season. They can make it to a conference title game. What does Will Anderson say to people with high expectations for the Houston Texans?
We appreciate that, but I think nobody's expectation is going to be higher than the expectation that we have for ourselves in the building and what Coach D'Amico, you know, wants for us and the standard that he has for us. We're just going to keep going out there swarming, attacking, and just building off what we did last year, and we can't worry about the past, and we can't worry about what happened last year. And this offseason in the training camp, we have to really grow together and really take that next step.
Yeah, Will Anderson has that answer programmed down to a T. That is one we've heard before from Will Anderson.
When he was talking about that, and I think like D'Amico shares so many traits, like various traits of my favorite coaches of all time. You can almost like it's a grab bag of some of my favorite coaches, and like all those traits, D'Amico has all of them. But one of the big things is that, yeah, you've got your long-term goals, but Frank Gantz Sr. used to say this, what's the most important play? The next play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not even the next game or anything else like that. It's just the next play is the thing that matters. And is especially for a team like this that's had so much off-season hype, and it's really hard to find anybody in the national media that's questioning the progress they've made, that, man, that's rat poison, as Nick Saban used to call it. That's rat poison after a while. You start to read too many positive press clippings and you forget how hard it is to win a single football game.
Yeah.
And I think this team's going to be pretty well brainwashed by the time they get to week one that, like, we haven't done anything yet and we got to win week one. That's our main objective.
Yeah. And I like that week one is an opponent that they should be focused for. You know, I mean, they're human, so, you know, some of that stuff may seep in with some of the guys, all the like you call it, the rat poison, Seth. But the fact that it's a road game, it's against Indianapolis, been a lot of chatter between those two teams this offseason.
A lot of chatter, yeah.
You know, the potential for a lack of focus should be low, I would think. I think they're going to come dialed in.
That's where I think CJ's playing five-dimensional chess.
Mm-hmm.
I think CJ figures, okay, yeah, we got to be sure that that these guys are really emotionally amped up and ready for the Colts.
Yeah,
so I'm going to talk a lot of smack about their linebackers in the offseason.
Good job, CJ.
Good job, CJ.
Yep, way to go. Speaking of CJ, Will Anderson, when did you know that CJ Stroud was that dude?
I've known CJ a long time, but doing training camp and just OTAs and watching him throughout the building, man, I knew he had that it factor to him. He was showing up every day, locked in, connecting with guys. I think that's the biggest thing when you know a guy's going to be really good is how they connect with their teammates. And the team just latched on to him, man, because he was so personable. And then he was just so competitive on the field, and he would get, like, angry at himself. Like, he didn't do something right. Like, he would come back and fix it, and coach would, like, show highlights of, like, when he did it wrong, and then he would come back and show another highlight when CJ did it right. And CJ just kept building and building off of that. And, you know, that's who he is, man.
Sean, I'm taking this. There's this imprint app that I got. I'm on my free trial right now.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. It's like, I'm not advertising them yet or anything, but it's, you can take these courses, and as you go through the course, they ask little questions and everything. So in my constant quest to be less unbearable, I'm taking a class on interpersonal dynamics right now.
Okay, yeah.
And a lot of what they talk about, like in a few of the units that have come up, is that it's building trust. Like if you're a leader especially, that you can be incredibly honest and blunt as a leader if first you develop trust with somebody. And it starts off with surface level, you know, getting to know you type of stuff, and then over time forming this relationship. And as long as you have trust between yourself and who you're supposed to be leading, you can be very honest with them. And that's something that CJ has really impressed me with as a young man right from the get-go. Like, he talks about that, about forming relationships with everybody. That's why he has everybody on the team at various times come over to his house for dinner, and just getting to know people and forming a relationship to where then you can have have difficult conversations that aren't like storming out of the room. Like CJ understands that to such an extreme degree. I think a lot of young guys think leadership means making grandiose speeches and everything else like that. I think CJ really has a good feel for building that trust first, and then getting to the point where you can be a leader. Like, establish the trust first. That's a prerequisite, and then you can be a genuinely effective leader.
And it's amazing. He was 21 when he was drafted. Like, right. he didn't turn 22 until like week 6 of this season, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
That's incredible. And
Ryan Day deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yep.
One of our Abigail on the YouTube, who just basically has consumed every bit of Texans content ever, just told me this weekend that Ryan Day had bonded with CJ partly over Ryan Day's father. I can't remember the exact tragedy, but he lost his father for some reason. But Ryan Day and CJ were able to bond over that. But
yeah,
a lot of the conversations that CJ's had at Ohio State with some of those coaches kind of set the table for what he is now. And he's had to, I think, because CJ doesn't have that natural leader personality, or at least what you think of in your brain, like a big outwardly gregarious guy or what have you. I think the fact that he kind of had to overcome some of his own personal trappings and everything means that he's a lot more methodical in it, because he's put more thought into it, and he had to do it on a huge stage at Ohio State with a lot of pressure on him.
Yep, no doubt. All right, let's get to headlines. We'll circle back to the Astros. Good day, good weekend for the Astros. NBA free agency, I should say, is popping overnight. What does it mean for the Houston Rockets? We'll get to that. Oh, and an Olympic hero does it again. We will get into all that in headlines. That is coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Infield stays in. Joey Loperfido will bat for the first time.
There's a sharply hit baseball down the left field line. One run scores. Here comes Yiner. Two RBI base hit for Loperfido. Astros lead it by 3. It is 8-5.
All right, we'll get into the good and the bad from the weekend with the Astros, but know that as you get into your car, the scant few of you that decided to work this week, as you get into your car, 2 out of 3 for the Astros. I can see where some people, maybe yesterday, Seth, didn't realize what the outcome of the game was because of the nearly 3-hour rain delay in between the top of the ninth and the rest of the game last night. Mother Nature dropped a big one on New York right in the middle of the ninth inning last night. But the Astros rode it out, and they win 10-5 in 11 innings. They take 2 out of 3 from the Mets over the weekend, and they sit 3.5 back of the suddenly reeling Seattle Mariners.
Right. Yeah. Not to mention the Rangers have fallen apart as well. Notable developments way, way, way down beneath the Astros on the standings.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the best part about yesterday, I think, was you know, we looked to this series with a lot of trepidation for the last couple of weeks, ever since Verlander got injured, because you're left with only 4 starters. I guess the thing to monitor and watch now is, okay, you used up a whole bunch of relievers in a reliever day yesterday. Sean Dubin goes and pitches 20 more pitches than he's ever pitched in a major league outing before in 3 1/3 scoreless innings. But now you go immediately into a day game in Toronto, and Not that I've already burnt out my my request for Framber to be like just, you know, go 8 innings or so. He did not do that on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But the stress is on them right now to mm-hmm. just really, you got to manage these pitchers very, very carefully.
Yeah, this is a big one today for Hunter Brown. You know, yeah. Hunter Brown, he's pitched 7 really good games in a row. Literally 7 quality starts, capital Q, capital S, like the stat. 6 innings of at least, you know, at worst case, 3 runs or less. And he's been even more dominant than that. Like, he's had a few shutout performances here. But this is a big one today because it's a day game after a really, not just a huge bullpen day where you use 7 pitchers, but a long day for the team where you're sitting around for 3 hours just to get a game over with. Mm-hmm. You got to maintain the momentum here into July. Save the bullpen if you can. I would guess that we'll find out in the next day or two here. They were talking about this on the post-game show yesterday on Space City, which is Hunter Brown's probably going to be the pitcher of the month in the American League, I would imagine. I can't imagine another pitcher having a better month than Hunter Brown did. So that's pretty cool. We'll find out in the next day or two about that. But independent of everything that he's done, today is a big day because it is a day game after a really long day yesterday. In a game against the team, the worst case in this series should be a split. There's no bullpen day in this series. You know, you got Hunter Brown, Ronel Blanco, Framber Valdez, Spencer Arrighetti, in some order. I forget what the permutation is, but they're all the 4 guys that start games for you are all starting games in this series. So I think it's Hunter that's going today. If I'm not mistaken,
you know who won't have suffered because of the rain delay, Sean?
Who's that?
Jose Altuve. So there you go. Altuve
well
fresh as a daisy after he eventually, I'm guessing, calmed down. Maybe he's still angry. You know Altuve. I tell you, as a home plate umpire, do you not feel an extra sense of guilt when you elicit that response out of Jose Altuve?
Yes.
Guy's only been ejected once before in his entire career. That you made Jose Altuve that's like your grandmother cussing.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh boy, oh man, I made grandma cuss.
Yeah,
I've never heard that before.
I must have really messed up. Damn. That sucks. Yeah. Altuve, we heard him in the post game a little earlier. He seemed to have cooled off a little bit. I will say this. The one thing that you couldn't glean from his post-game media scrum when he was asked about this is when he was kind of going through the mechanics of the play that got him ejected, he kind of absolved the home plate umpire blame in that whole thing. Because it is hard for the home plate umpire to see the ball hit his foot just based on where he's positioned. The first, second, and third base umpires did not get absolved by Altuve, but he didn't really say it. Like, if you read the transcript, you wouldn't know. But if you watch the media scrum, he's like, oh, you know, the first, second, and third base umpires, and he gets that kind of look on his face like,
Hey, you know what I admired about Altuve? This was impressive to me. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be impressed by this. Yeah. But, like, as angry as he was, as far as I could tell, when he was throwing his tantrum, he was throwing his tantrum in English. I would imagine if I were in that same situation, I would assume I'd go to my mother tongue immediately.
Yeah.
Because you're in that state where all your filters are off and you're just cussing somebody out. That's what a professional he is, Sean. He managed like, oh no, this guy needs to get this message in his in his native tongue.
I didn't notice that. Did you hear? Could you hear him? Is that what
it was? I think he was saying no. I couldn't hear it, but it looked like he was saying, "There's no way."
Okay.
I think that was my lip reading.
Yeah.
Now maybe that's very close to something else.
Yeah. Day game today against the Blue Jays. Canada Day up in Canada, and that's why. So 4 game set against the Blue Jays, who are not playing well, and then 3 this weekend against Minnesota, and I will be there scouting for 2 of those. Friday and Saturday, I'll be in the house. I can't wait. I get to see a bullpen start on Friday and Hunter Brown on Saturday. I'm kind of the best of both worlds right there. Should be fun. NBA free agency.
Are you going to be obnoxious?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially Saturday.
Like yeah.
Because Friday, Amy and I are sitting in the left field stands, in the front row in left field. Uh-huh. Saturday is almost like our version of a bullpen day. We're just buying tickets to get us in the building, and then we're just Bumping around the ballpark. Yeah. Standing
you
room.
Guys then. If I could see Amy being obnoxious before you, like she'll get something will anger her and she'll like take it on herself. She'd fight the whole stadium.
Accurate
is what she would do.
Accurate, and she's probably listening right now with a big grin on her face, nodding, going, hell yeah.
I shouldn't have used the word obnoxious, Amy, but you know I mean it in like in a productive way.
She knows, yeah. Trust me. NBA free agency overnight, the big one, Paul George to the Philadelphia 76ers. 4 years, $212 million. George opted out of his deal over the weekend. There was still some rumblings that he might sign back with the Clippers. That's not the case. The Clippers do sign back, Seth. James Harden on a two-year $70 million deal.
They're going to get such a great regular season out of him.
Oh,
boy, good for them. Good for them. Clippers fans, they know it. They know it in their soul that they'll get a good regular season out of James Harden.
Did you see who else the Clippers signed over the weekend? Kevin Porter Jr., signs with the Clippers over the weekend. Now, for those wondering, there may be Rocket fans who the last they know of Kevin Porter Jr. was him getting arrested and accused of some pretty unsavory things with his significant other. He reached a plea deal on all that. So he went and played somewhere else this year. China, somewhere else, I think. Overseas, maybe. But he's back in the NBA now with the Clippers. So he is a signable entity. Significantly less than Harden, I'm not quite sure. And probably not nearly as good as the deal the Rockets gave him a few years ago that they cut him from. So
with no regard for chemistry or anything else, the Clippers are just blazing ahead to be regular season mavens.
Yeah, I guess. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard will play his 40 games and they'll get a 5 seed and away we go. We'll talk later in the show. Like, okay, with all this stuff happening in the West, where are the Rockets right now? Chris Paul cut by the Warriors yesterday. And then, man, he didn't waste any time finding a new team. He, within hours, had signed with the San Antonio Spurs. 1 year, $11 million. That's a good signing for the Spurs. I know Chris Paul isn't what he used to be, but that's kind of like an Astros signing from 2017, you know, where they're bringing in Brian McCann and they're bringing in Josh Reddick and Carlos Beltran.
Yeah.
He's like a Carlos Beltran right here, you know?
That whole presence and leadership, et cetera, is a big deal.
Yep.
Because kudos to him, because honestly, when the Rockets got Chris Paul, I would have thought that was going to be the last dying gasp of him being that guy. But these guys are just, they're playing forever, man.
Well, especially him, because he couldn't stay healthy.
Alperen Şengün's going to, by the time this generation gets old, Şengün's going to be like a 57-year-old, the wise elder statesman for the Rockets.
Dude.
At some point. We'll have you and I, we'll have a big argument over whether or not they should let go of 56-year-old Alperen Şengün.
Yes.
But then the Shanghai Shooters are going to sign him, because that'll be an NBA squad by then, to be the veteran presence in the clubhouse.
They'll be
calling it a clubhouse by then in basketball.
Two old guys on the Muppet Show yelling at each other in the balcony about Alperen Şengün. Simone Biles headed to the Olympics again. You'll hear her name again.
What the hell are these floor? I don't know a damn thing about floor routines other than that human beings shouldn't be able to twist and turn the
weight. Dude.
There were no twisties in that performance.
There were not. Holy crap. Some of the stuff she does is incredible. She's headed back to the Olympics. She earned her third trip to the sport's biggest stage by cruising to victory at the Olympic trials on Sunday night. So if you're just waking up, Simone Biles on her way to the Olympics in Paris. All right, those are your...
Women's gymnastics, partly due to Simone Biles, it feels like it's gone the opposite direction of a lot of other sports, where like now, I don't, like that used to be the ultimate in just the, like, only young women would excel in it, and you're over the hill by the age you're 25.
To be fair, she might be the only one that's in her age bracket. I have no idea if it's...
Well, they changed the rules to make it a little different, but yeah. Like she's a rare exception on many, many.
Yeah, parts. She's like 27, which that translates to like 87 in gymnastics years. It's wild.
You know what I guess part of it too is that, like, because of NIL and NCAA, a lot of like old hags that are 22 years old,
right?
Yeah, like are still relevant as college athletes for whatever. Yeah.
So when I look at Livy Dunn, that's what I think. Look at this old hag. Yeah. That's exactly what I think. All right. The good and the bad from the Astros week. I mean, there was a lot of good. I'll be honest with you. The Astros have gotten into such a groove, I've completely forgotten about one thing when it comes to this team. And we'll talk about what that is and a whole lot more coming up next.
Hey.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Infield stays in. Joey Loperfido will bat for the first time.
There's a sharply hit baseball down the left field line. One run scores. Here comes Yiner. Two RBI base hit for Loperfido. Astros lead it by three. It is 8-5.
All right, we'll get into the good and the bad from the weekend with the Astros, but know that as you get into your car, the scant few of you that decided to work this week, as you get into your car, 2 out of 3 for the Astros. I can see where some people, maybe yesterday, Seth, didn't realize what the outcome of the game was because of the nearly 3-hour rain delay in between the top of the ninth and the rest of the game last night. Mother Nature dropped a big one on New York right in the middle of the ninth inning last night, but the Astros rode it out. And they win 10-5 in 11 innings. They take 2 out of 3 from the Mets over the weekend, and they sit 3.5 back of the suddenly reeling Seattle Mariners.
Right. Yeah. Not to mention the Rangers have fallen apart as well. Notable developments way, way, way down beneath the Astros on the standings. Mm-hmm. But still, the best part about yesterday, I think, was you know, we looked to this series with a lot of trepidation for the last couple of weeks, ever since Verlander got injured, because you're left with only 4 starters. I guess the thing to monitor and watch now is, okay, you used up a whole bunch of relievers in a reliever day yesterday. Sean Dubin goes and pitches 20 more pitches than he's ever pitched in a major league outing before in 3 1/3 scoreless innings. But now you go immediately into a day game in Toronto, and I've already burnt out my request for Framber to be like, just, you know, go 8 innings or so. He did not do that on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But the stress is on them right now to mm-hmm. just really, you got to manage these pitchers very, very carefully.
Yeah, this is a big one today for Hunter Brown. You know, yeah. Hunter Brown, he's pitched 7 really good games in a row, literally 7 quality starts, capital Q, capital S, like the stat, 6 innings of at least, you know, at worst case, 3 runs or less. And he's been even more dominant than that. Like, he's had a few shutout performances here. But this is a big one today because it's a day game after a really, not just a huge bullpen day where you use 7 pitchers, but a long day for the team where you're sitting around for 3 hours just to get a game over with. Mm-hmm. You got to maintain the momentum here into July. Save the bullpen if you can. I would guess that we'll find out in the next day or two here. They were talking about this on the post-game show yesterday on Space City, which is Hunter Brown's probably going to be the pitcher of the month in the American League, I would imagine. I can't imagine another pitcher having a better month than Hunter Brown did. So that's pretty cool. We'll find out in the next day or two about that. But independent of everything that he's done, today is a big day because it is a day game after a really long day yesterday. In a game against the team, the worst case in this series should be a split. There's no bullpen day in this series. You know, you got Hunter Brown, Ronel Blanco, Framber Valdez, Spencer Arrighetti, in some order. I forget what the permutation is, but they're all, like, the 4 guys that start games for you are all starting games in this series. So I think it's Hunter that's going today, if I'm not mistaken.
You know who won't have suffered because of the rain delay, Sean?
Who's that?
Jose Altuve. So there you go. Altuve
well
fresh
rested.
As a daisy after he eventually, I'm guessing, calmed down. Maybe he's still angry. You know Altuve. I tell you, as a home plate umpire, do you not feel an extra sense of guilt when you elicit that response out of Jose Altuve?
Yes.
Guy's only been ejected once before in his entire career. That you made Jose Altuve that's like your grandmother cussing.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh boy. Oh man, I made grandma cuss.
Yeah,
I've never heard that before.
I must have really messed up. Damn. That sucks. Yeah. Altuve, we heard him in the post game a little earlier. He seemed to have cooled off a little bit. I will say this. The one thing that you couldn't glean from his post-game media scrum when he was asked about this is when he was kind of going through the mechanics of the play that got him ejected, he kind of absolved the home plate umpire blame in that whole thing, because it is hard for the home plate umpire to see the ball hit his foot just based on where he's positioned. The first, second, and third base umpires did not get absolved by Altuve, but he didn't really say it. Like, if you read the transcript, you wouldn't know. But if you watch the media scrum, he's like, oh, you know, the first, second, and third base umpires, and he gets that kind of look on his face like,
hey, you know what I admired about Altuve? This was impressive to me. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be impressed by this. Yeah. But, like, as angry as he was, as far as I could tell, when he was throwing his tantrum, he was throwing his tantrum in English. Which I would imagine, if I were in that same situation, I would assume I'd go to my mother tongue immediately.
Yeah.
Because you're in that state where all your filters are off and you are just cussing somebody out. That's what a professional he is, Sean.
Could
he manage like, oh no, this guy needs to get this message in his his native tongue.
I didn't notice that. Did you hear? Could you hear him? Is that what
it was? I think he was saying no. I couldn't hear it, but it looked like he was saying, "There's no way."
Okay.
I think that was my lip reading. Yeah. Now maybe that's very close to something else.
Yeah. Day game today against the Blue Jays. Canada Day up in Canada, and that's why. So 4-game set against the Blue Jays, who are not playing well, and then 3 this weekend against Minnesota, and I will be there scouting for 2 of those. Friday and Saturday, I'll be in the house. I can't wait. I get to see a bullpen start on Friday and Hunter Brown on Saturday. I'm kind of the best of both worlds right there. Should be fun. NBA free agency.
Are you going to be obnoxious?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially Saturday.
Like yeah.
Because Friday, Amy and I are sitting in the left field stands, in the front row in left field. Uh-huh. Saturday is almost like our version of a bullpen day. We're just buying tickets to get us in the building, and then we're just,
just
bumping around the ballpark. Yeah, standing
room. Guys saying, if I could see Amy being obnoxious before you, like she'll get something to anger her, and she'll like take it on herself. She'd fight the whole stadium.
Accurate
is what she would do.
Accurate, and she's probably listening right now with a big grin on her face, nodding, going, hell yeah.
Yeah, I shouldn't have used the word obnoxious, Amy, but you know I mean it in like in a productive way.
She knows, yeah. Trust me. NBA free agency overnight, the big one, Paul George to the Philadelphia 76ers. 4 years, $212 million. George opted out of his deal over the weekend. There was still some rumblings that he might sign back with the Clippers. That's not the case. The Clippers do sign back, Seth. James Harden on a 2-year, $70 million deal.
They're going to get such a great regular season out of him.
Oh,
boy, good for them. Good for them. Clippers fans, they know it. They know it in their soul that they'll get a good regular season out of James Harden.
Did you see who else the Clippers signed over the weekend? Kevin Porter Jr.
That's
signs
right.
with the Clippers over the weekend. Now, for those wondering, there may be Rocket fans who the last they know of Kevin Porter Jr. was him getting arrested and accused of some pretty unsavory things with his significant other. He reached a plea deal on all that. So I think he went and played somewhere else this year. China, somewhere else, I think. Overseas, maybe. But he's back in the NBA now with the Clippers. So he is a signable entity. Significantly less than Harden, I'm not quite sure. And probably not nearly as good as the deal the Rockets gave him a few years ago that they cut him from. So
with no regard for chemistry or anything else, the Clippers are just blazing ahead to be regular season mavens.
Yeah, okay. I guess. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard will play his 40 games and they'll get a 5 seed and away we go. We'll talk later in the show, like, okay, with all this stuff happening in the West, where are the Rockets right now? Chris Paul, cut by the Warriors yesterday. And then, man, he didn't waste any time finding a new team. He, within hours, had signed with the San Antonio Spurs. 1 year, $11 million. That's a good signing for the Spurs. I know Chris Paul isn't what he used to be, but that's kind of like an Astros signing from 2017, you know, where they're bringing in Brian McCann and they're bringing in Josh Reddick and Carlos Beltran.
Yeah.
He's like a Carlos Beltran right here, you know?
But, that whole presence and leadership, et cetera, is a big deal.
Yep.
Because kudos to him, because honestly, when the Rockets got Chris Paul, I would have thought that was going to be the last dying gasp of him being that guy. But these guys are just, they're playing forever, man.
Well, especially him, because he couldn't stay healthy.
Alperen Şengün's going to, by the time this generation gets old, Şengün's going to be like a 57-year-old, the wise elder statesman for the Rockets.
Dude.
At some point. Well, we'll have you and I will have a big argument over whether or not they should let go of 56-year-old Alperen Şengün.
Yes.
But then the Shanghai Shooters are going to sign him because that'll be an NBA squad by then to be the veteran presence in the clubhouse.
They'll be
calling it a clubhouse by then in basketball.
Two old guys on the Muppet Show yelling at each other in the balcony about Alperen Şengün. Simone Biles headed to the Olympics again. You'll hear her name again.
What the hell these floor? I don't know a damn thing about floor routines other than that human beings shouldn't be able to twist and turn the
wheel. Dude.
There were no twisties in that performance.
There were not. Holy crap. Some of the stuff she does is incredible. She's headed back to the Olympics. She earned her third trip to the sport's biggest stage by cruising to victory at the Olympic trials on Sunday night. So if you're just waking up, Simone Biles on her way to the Olympics in Paris. All right, those are your...
Women's gymnastics, partly due to Simone Biles, it feels like it's gone the opposite direction of a lot of other sports where, like now, I don't... Like, that used to be the ultimate in just the, like, only young women would excel in it, and you're over the hill by the age you're 25.
To be fair, she might be the only one that's in her age bracket. I have no idea if it's...
Well, they changed the rules to make it a little different, but yeah. 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 Like, she's a rare exception on many, many.
Yeah, parts. She's like more... 27, which that translates to like 87 in gymnastics years. It's wild.
You know what I guess part of it, too, is that like because of NIL and NCAA, a lot of like old hags that are 22 years old
right.
are still relevant yeah. as college athletes yeah. for whatever. Yeah.
So when I look at Livy Dunn, that's what I think. Look at this old hag. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I think. All right. The good and the bad from the Astros week. I mean, there was a lot of good. I'll be honest with you. The Astros have gotten into such a groove. I've completely forgotten about one thing when it comes to this team. And we'll talk about what that is and a whole lot more coming up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.